With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
You're listening to the Red Sea Podcast, part of the Over the Monster Network.
Red Sox fans have longed to hear. Boston Red Sox are world champions.
Hosted by Jake Devereaux.
It's gone. It's into the bullpen. This game is tied. This game is tied. David Ortiz.
And featuring Keaton DeRosier.
It's a grand slam. I'm telling you.
Still aren't really sure what the podcast is. It might be another episode of The Red Sea. It might be a totally different show. We don't know. It doesn't really matter. It is me, Matt Collins. I am with Jake Devereaux. This is our second go-around. We will continue to be with you every Wednesday. How is everything going, Jake?
Not great, Bob.
Yeah.
This whole outbreak thing is really throwing a wrench in baseball. And I know that, like, some Red Sox fans are probably thinking, like, oh, man, with this pitching staff, I'd be relieved to see the season get canceled. But I don't know. Like, we still want baseball. And I don't know. This is just such a loaded thing. I'm gonna honestly be sorting my thoughts out about this on this podcast, to be perfectly frank.
Oh, I don't think I'm ever going to have my thoughts totally sorted out on this. This is way too complex for me to ever figure it out. But yeah, I mean, I think we have to start with the outbreak. It's obviously the story of the league right now. So the Marlins, as of right now, I believe these are the numbers. They had 4 more players test positive for the virus today. So I believe they're up to 15 players, which is half of their active roster, half of the expanded active roster. And 2 staffers, which I'm assuming means coaches, and that's all since Friday. So right now the Marlins are stuck in Philadelphia, quarantining in a Philly hotel, which a part of this that nobody is talking about is that this hotel is now a quarantine zone. There are hotel workers who are just stuck in this hotel, are working in this hotel where there's an active outbreak. It's just insane that we are putting people through this. But so the Marlins are stuck in Philadelphia. Their season got suspended today. That was first broken by, I believe, by Craig Mish, who's kind of all over all things Marlins. Phillies are not playing until Friday. They were supposed to be playing the Yankees, but they were the last team to play the Marlins. They had some tests come back today. None of the tests for players or coaches were positive. They did have a clubby test positive. We'll get more on that in a second. But so the Phillies are off until Friday. The Yankees, who are supposed to be playing the Phillies, are now playing the Orioles, who are supposed to be playing the Marlins on Wednesday and Thursday. There's going to be more changes for the schedule next week, announced later this week. This is a total disaster. I mean, they are just changing the schedule around willy-nilly at the last second. I don't really even know a question to ask. This is just insane.
Yeah, it's really insane. It's just like 3 games in for this to be happening.
Yeah,
it's bananas that it happened, that it came off the rails this fast. Also, like, the odds of it being a Florida team that this happened to were high.
Well, so I don't even understand. I've seen, like, conflicting things about this, but I think it's possible that they caught it in Georgia, which Georgia isn't much better than Florida right now anyways.
Right.
But, yeah, either way, I mean, that whole part of the country is totally not doing what they're supposed to. And then, I mean, there's also the fact that they played on Sunday. They played a game. The outbreak, the early signs of the outbreak were already apparent on Sunday. I believe 4 players had tested positive. At least 4 players had tested positive at that point. 4 or 5. And they left it up to the team. Miguel Rojas led the way. Miguel Rojas, by the way, is one of the players that tested positive today. He led the way. There was a group text among Marlins. As far as I know, the Phillies never even really got a chance to say whether or not they wanted to play. It's just how that was left up to the players, how it was allowed, that decision was allowed to be made by guys who have been raised their entire lives to, like, play through injuries and, like, put your head down and play no matter what. It's just, it's a stain on the league, to be frank about it.
Yeah, and more than that, it's a stain on Rob Manfred's leadership or lack thereof. And, you know, this is just a continuance of what we've seen from him, which is just a whole lot of really bad leadership, really bad decisions. You know, you need to make sweeping, unilateral, responsible decisions when dealing with a pandemic like this. And it just seems like he is constantly afraid of making a bold decision that some of the owners from the teams aren't going to like. It seems like he always wants to please everybody, and he pleases nobody as a result. And, like, I just can't say enough bad things about Rob Manfred. We've had some pretty bad commissioners in the history of baseball, but Bud Selig was, like, a pretty decent one.
Really wasn't, but Manfred makes him look great.
Yeah, I mean, like, Selig had definite knocks against him, but I feel like he got it right later in his career. Like, I would take late career Selig over what we're getting from Manfred in a heartbeat.
I would say,
because he was competent.
I mean, the bare minimum that Manfred doesn't reach that Selig reached is, I think Selig genuinely wanted good things for baseball. I do not believe that's the case for Rob Manfred.
I totally agree. And it's horrible. I don't know what to say. He's like,
this whole thing, I mean, this whole thing has basically been designed for him to be able to keep pushing. And, I mean, this was said by me and by a lot of other people when this first started, that I think he was on Dan Patrick's show about a month ago, and Dan Patrick asked him what it would take to shut down a season. And there are just no objective, like, numerical guidelines to shut down a season. It's all vague, like, competitive balance. I don't know the exact way he phrased it, but it's all just very vague, and it's all just left up to his judgment. And that is insane. You can't, with something like this, you need an objective number on paper that you have to be held accountable to. And now he can just do whatever he wants, and he can just, like, move the goalposts whenever he wants, because there was just no guidelines put in place. And that was clearly a disaster when it first came out that was the case, and we're seeing it in real time that you can't, if you're going to be playing through a situation like this, you need to have more clear guidelines, and you need to have something that you can be held accountable to. And just Manfred is not being held accountable to that, and he's not being held accountable to anything, because he's not even speaking. The only time we've heard him speak is on MLB Network, which is owned by the league that he runs, from Tom Verducci, who was just reading off a piece of paper and asking no follow-up questions. It's an absolute joke that Manfred hasn't had to answer any mildly tough questions about any of this.
Yeah, and I think it goes even further than that. Not to get political, but like, there's just no oversight at all coming from any place. So Manfred doesn't have to answer to anybody because nobody's answering to anybody in this country right now.
It is all just a total mess, and I mean, Manfred is right at the center of it. He's certainly not alone, but I mean, I keep seeing people kind of trying to take the blame off of him a little bit and like keep pointing out that he's an employee of the owners, which, yes, but I mean, God, this is his job. If he's going to get paid all this money to be the face, then he's going to take the beating and he's going to have to deal with it. So just no good things to say about Rob Manfred.
It makes me think, like, what's the point of a commissioner, though, if a commissioner is not actually going to make any of his own decisions? Like, if his decisions are just going to be what pleases the most owners, then, like, why just not vote on every single thing?
His title just should call. Yeah, I mean, his title should not be commissioner. You know, they need to change that because he doesn't work for the league. He doesn't, like, do anything in the best interest of the league. He does it in the best interest of the owners. That's his job. He came up as a guy who negotiated on behalf of the owners. That's how he kind of broke into the league. And so, yeah, he's not a commissioner.
Yeah, and I think just one more thing I want to point out. The most egregious thing to me about all this is just that infectious disease experts basically told the Marlins that they had a COVID breakout and that they should not play, and they still played.
Yeah, it was totally clear that they should not have played, and they still did. Phillies, like I said, didn't really have a say, so now they are open to it. Like I said earlier, they got some good news. Still not thrilled about the way that's being framed. Everyone's just kind of just like tossing aside the fact that a clubhouse attendant that we really don't know anything about. I don't know how old they are. I don't know anything about their health, but I mean, that person tested positive, so obviously we hope that they're doing well. But no Phillies players or coaches have tested positive. But this was tweeted by Nick Stellini earlier today on Tuesday from Harvard Medical School about testing. It takes a couple days for these tests to come back. And this test was taken right after, I believe it was taken on Sunday. So it was right after they were in contact with these Marlins players. So 100% of the time on the day you're exposed to the virus, you're going to get a negative test. It takes 4 days for that to go under 50%. So it's really these next few days of test results from the Phillies that we're really looking for. And it kind of seems like the season hangs in the balance of what happens with these Phillies tests. If they can get through this clean, and this is limited to the Marlins, things are salvageable, at least for now. But, I mean, if the Phillies get, like, 4, 5, 6 positive tests this week, I don't know how you can keep playing. This is just – that's a total outbreak at that point.
If the Phillies come out of this clean, do you think this serves as a wake-up call for teams and players to start taking this more seriously and the league to start taking this more seriously? Or do you think that we're just going to inevitably have another episode just like this in a couple weeks?
I mean, you would think so, but – like, look around the world. If they need a wake-up call at this point, then I think they're just so far gone. We've been dealing with this as a world for months now. If you needed a Marlins breakout to really take things seriously, I don't think you're ever going to take it seriously.
Yeah, it's not a great situation, man. I'm stressed about the whole thing. I really want baseball to work out, but it just seems very irresponsible that it just doesn't seem like they're set up like this. And even going back to the very first days of summer camp opening up, I just remember Mike Rizzo and the Nationals being upset about testing protocols and the Giants being upset about it and teams even going as far as employing their own labs to get more reliable test results and get them back faster. It just seems like there's no cohesive strategy here that is viable.
Yeah, they're kind of playing it by ear and just changing things as the days go on, and that I don't know how that's going to work into the fall into September and into October with the playoffs. I don't know. I watched a lot of baseball this weekend. I was excited to have it back. I had it on my TV pretty much all day, and I can't tell you how many players I saw high-fiving. I saw just getting all together in the dugout, not distancing at all, spitting all over the field, managers with masks under their noses. I have the White Sox-Indian game on in the background right now. Terry Francona, one of my favorite people in the world, does not know how to wear a mask. And it's driving me nuts. And some of it, like the high-fiving, I think people are giving players too hard of a time about that because it's really hard. You've been doing that for like 15, 20 years of your life. I understand sure. that it's hard to break that habit, but it doesn't make me feel good just seeing it. And it's just, it looks like they can't stop.
Yeah. And I think we talked about this on the Red Seat podcast before even the season started, but there's just so many guys, I think, that fall on the political side of this in the league that don't actually even take this as seriously as we ought to. So I think it's just going to be so hard to get everybody to take it seriously.
Yeah, it's just, it's really hard. We talked about this a little bit off the air, but I mean, the big conversation in the sports world is basically that baseball should have gone to a bubble situation. They point to the NBA, which seems to be working well. NHL just, I believe the teams just got to their bubbles and there have been no positive tests on that intake, which is obviously really good. But I don't think baseball ever could have gone to a bubble. There's the fact that there was really nowhere to play in my mind. Arizona and Florida don't seem viable, A, because those states are a mess right now, and B, because it's just too hot to play during the day. Baseball is so different from these other sports because it's the regular season, so you have all the teams there, and they play every day. The other sports, they have days off. You can space out the games. I don't think the bubble is ever realistic for baseball.
Yeah, I think it would have been really hard. I personally would have voted for, if it was up to me, to try it in Arizona and Florida and do whatever we could to like manage the heat. I don't know, install misters on the field or something like that. Like, you know, I think managing the heat would have been an easier thing than trying to manage COVID-19 and traveling like normal, which just is a bananas idea to me.
I don't think there was a good idea for baseball. I just
probably not
would have worked. So end of the day, last question about this, are they gonna finish?
Honestly, at this point I would bet against them finishing, and I feel badly about that, but I just think that it's probably inevitable to me. I just think it's a numbers thing. I can't imagine it not coming to this or worse again in the future.
I agree with your last point, but I don't think Rob Manfred's going to end it. Unless it's going to take something very bad to happen.
Like a clubhouse attendant dying of COVID?
Honestly, I don't know that that does it. A player, I think, needs to go to the ICU if this is going to be taken seriously, which is a totally depressing thing. But I don't know. That's just where I'm at. There's really nothing else to say. This is obviously a fluid situation. I feel like by the time this goes up Wednesday morning, there's probably going to be different information out. But I guess we should say we're recording this at, this is 4:30 on Tuesday. So we'll see what happens. I guess I have one more, this is not about the outbreak, but one more sort of COVID baseball question that I did not put on the agenda, so I'm kind of throwing this at you.
Okay.
What do you think about the cardboard people?
Kind of taking it a little amusing. Bit later. Yeah, no, I find the cardboard people amusing. I like that they put drink water behind, It was drink water, right? That they put right behind home plate at Fenway.
I didn't even notice that behind home plate. Jeez.
Yeah, they have some like funny cardboard cutouts, and also like I found it amusing when Pete Alonso hit that 116 mile an hour bullet that was pretty much the hardest hit ball I've ever seen.
Somebody would have died if they were actual people.
Right. And I thought that was kind of funny that there's just these cardboard cutouts just taking it in the face.
I don't think any. I think he hit it over their heads, though, because I kind of wanted to see just like a clean rip of like a decapitation. Yeah, I kind of find it unnerving, but it's also kind of funny. I will say, I hate the babies. Get the giant babies out of here. I think, like, San Diego, there's always a gigantic, like, people submitted their babies, which is cute. Oh, but God, in practice, it just does not work because it's a giant baby. I hate it. I hate it a lot. So, yeah, we can get rid of the giant babies, I'll be on board. But until then, I'm iffy on it.
You know what's jarring about it, too, is that some people took, like, terrible close-ups, and then those close-ups have been made into cardboard cutouts, and it just doesn't look right. But some people took, like, you know, responsible full body shots that actually kind of look like a cardboard cutout of a person. Yeah, so it's just the degree of quality here is pretty funny.
I think I preferred the, I forget what team did it in Korea, but they put a bunch of stuffed animals and stuff. I think I preferred that. And I think Oakland's done that too. But the cardboard cutouts are okay.
The stuffed animals gets me. That's pretty funny. And also, I think someone has to make a Twitter account dedicated to lonely mascots in the stands because
Why are they really funny.
So my wife asked me this yesterday, and I said, I think they are there for our benefit.
It's
so
definitely like, for TV, but it's...
Yeah.
Like, there was a video, somebody put a video on Twitter. One of the Mets beat reporters, I forget who it is, so sorry to whoever that is.
Is it Tim Britton?
No, it wasn't Tim Britton. I think it was, I don't remember what it was, but they posted a video of Mr. and Mrs. Met dancing up in like the third deck for absolutely nobody. Like it wasn't on camera or anything. They were just like, what is happening?
Well, you know, married couples, they got to keep it fresh.
I guess so. All right. So let's move on to the Red Sox pitching staff, which is... I don't know what you're supposed to say. They've been worse than expected, which seems impossible, but this is where we're at. Nathan Eovaldi was very good to pretty good, depending on how much of a ding you want to give him for playing the Orioles. But he looked, no complaints about what Nathan Eovaldi did on Friday. And then Martin Perez was terrible, although he did settle down after a couple of innings, but he was terrible to start. Ryan Weber was terrible. Josh Osich, Jeffrey Springs combination to start Monday's game was terrible. Like I said, we're recording this Tuesday afternoon, so we haven't seen what Matt Hall does, but I gotta say I'm not very confident about it. I don't know if you have anything to say about any of those performances.
They were all really bad,
yeah.
Except for Eovaldi, obviously. It was surprising to me, and I think clearly the wrong choice, that Zach Godley wasn't given the start. I don't really know why they would tell us that Osich was going to be an opener when it was just a straight bullpen game, as you've pointed out many
times.
Don't
get me started. Drives me insane.
Like, yeah, these make sense.
These are baseball people. They know what they're saying. Why can't they just say what it actually is? It is absolutely my biggest pet peeve. And you're right. I think a lot of... I don't know. I don't think that you love the opener. Am I putting words in your mouth?
No, I do not love the opener.
So I like the opener. But either way, Zach Godley has to be in before the fifth inning in that game.
100%.
I would have put him in the second... Even if you want to keep with Osich because he only threw 10 pitches in the first, go with Godley in the third, you cannot put in Jeffrey Springs after that. It's a bizarre decision. I don't know where that came from. But yeah, I mean, Godley, to his credit, looked very good. I never know how much to put into that when, I mean, the Mets were already winning in a blowout, and it just seems like offenses kind of take a back seat and kind of are a little more relaxed and not as urgent. So I don't know how much of that to factor in, but I mean, there's no doubt that Godley looked good, and compared to basically every other Red Sox pitcher, he looked amazing. So presumably he's going to be starting the next time through, but yeah, that was a bizarre decision.
Yeah, if he's not starting, there's like major issues.
Starting or like, I mean, I wouldn't mind if he was if he came in the second or third after an opener.
If he was a true follower, yeah,
exactly. Right. If, yeah, if he does the Yanni Chirinos, Ryan Yarbrough role, that's fine. But he's got to pitch a bulk innings, getting in there early in a game next time through.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, I think we're going to see a lot of this nonsense just as they churn through pitchers and try and see what works. Jeffrey Springs looks really, really bad. Osic doesn't look great. Covey is awful, like god awful.
Covey's not on the roster anymore.
No, I think they activated him just so they could then send him down. Is that correct?
I believe he needed to be put on the 40-man. I don't know that he had to be put on the active roster, but I'm assuming he did. That was part of his, because he asked to be released by the Rays. So I believe.
Yeah, and someone on the radio made a point, like, why is it that you're not throwing Covey in, you know, the blowout game?
Yeah, it makes no sense.
Rather than in a game where you actually have a chance to come back.
Yeah, it makes no sense. We'll get to that in a second. We're going to talk about Ron Reinicke in a second. But before we do, I want to stick with the pitching staff and talk about Mike Fultonevich, surprise DFA by the Braves on Monday after he got shelled by the Rays. Just in October, he got the start in Game 5 of the NLDS, the most important game of the Braves season. He got the start. His next start in a game that counted, he got designated for assignment after. So kind of a surprise there, not to say it was a bad decision, but definitely surprising. But given that the Red Sox are on every single pitcher that becomes available, you've got to assume that they're going to be trying to make a move here, right?
Maybe. And I only say maybe because I think there is a ton of stuff that we don't know. I think this situation is going to be really weird when whoever reports on this finally like gets the scoop as to why he's been released. Because you don't typically release a guy who started two games for you in the NLDS. And, you know, you mentioned the Game 5 game where he got shelled. He gave up 6 earned runs in just 0.1 of an inning in that game, if you remember. But the game before, Game 2, the dude pitched 7 shutout innings and struck out 7. So this guy has talent, but the thing that's weird is that some people have been posting like comparisons, and he looks off physically, and his velocity has been really down too. So like, I'm not sure if there's something maybe health wise or whatever. I don't want to speculate, but I don't know that Bloom is gonna just blindly trade for this guy when clearly like this is not something that you see every day. There's a lot that worries me about this.
There's definitely a lot that worries me about this. But they just claim Dylan Covey and Steven Gonsalves and all of these other guys. So I think you at least have to put an offer. Yeah, I definitely wouldn't be offering anything significant, but I'm at least calling and making some sort of offer because the worst that can happen is that he's like every other pitcher on this roster.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally get that. I just think everybody's looking at it like a foregone conclusion, and I just think with the weirdness around it, it might not be, because like all the other guys you mentioned, the Red Sox might see something that they like about them, a pitch or something that they think they can work with, and in the case of Covey, like Bloom knows him pretty intimately because of the time that he spent in Tampa Bay. But like
he wasn't with the Rays. Fulte, he went to the Rays after Bloom.
Oh, really? Okay. Okay, that makes more sense. But, you know, even still, I think there's just, I would temper my expectations for them claiming him at this point.
Well, I don't think that he would make it to them on a waiver claim anyways.
They probably have to trade for him.
We already talked about the Marlins losing half of their roster, and they get literally the first chance at him. So I would hope that they put in a claim for him at least.
Isn't it weird, though? It's just really weird.
Yeah, and there was talk. I mean, Talking Chop, which is the SB Nation Braves site, mentioned something about him kind of going after some of his critics on Twitter, both beat writers and fans. So there's some like sort of confidence issues going on too. So I definitely don't. I wouldn't be confident if they got him, but I still think that you'd have to take a chance just because of everything else on this pitching staff. I mean, Matt Hall is starting in a few hours, so
yeah. Yeah, that says a lot. I want to get back to Godley for just one second, though. Yeah. Ian Kundle pointed out on Twitter how different his pitch mix was when he did have success coming in the later innings. And the fact that he was throwing basically all cutters and curveballs is a really good sign. And clearly the Red Sox, you know, made him make that adjustment, because his fastball sinker that he was throwing before was just the junk pitch for him. And Keaton and I talked about this at length. His curveball has been a good pitch for him throughout his entire career. And he actually looked good with a lot of these cutters. I mean, some of the cutters that he threw were excellent pitches. So if he can become a cutter curveball guy only, I think this one has a higher chance of working out than some of the others.
For a 60-game season, I might agree. I really don't like that idea as just like a guy going forward, just because you start throwing only pitches with that much movement, teams just aren't going to swing, and you're just going to walk everybody.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Sure, but like, even if you get Godley to be a long reliever for you
for sure.
In the future, like, cool. That's found gold at this point.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, he definitely need to make an adjustment. So I am interested to see how that goes, but I feel like it's something that works well when teams aren't expecting it, but once it becomes your MO, the results start to go down pretty quickly.
Some of those swings though were brutal.
Oh, he looked outstanding. I will say nothing bad about what he did on Monday.
What do you think of his grunts, though?
Not a grunt guy. Gotta cut it out with the grunts. Nathan Eovaldi does it too. You guys gotta chill. This is not tennis. You gotta relax with that.
It's a lot. Yeah. It's a lot to, especially with the empty stadiums. Yeah. It's right in my ear.
Yeah, I'm not down with it. So back to Renicky. We talked about what he did on Monday with the pitching. I don't really think we have to go anymore with that, but he's made some other weird decisions. As we're talking, getting ready for Tuesday's game, he is sitting Alex Verdugo again against another lefty, with Benintendi moving down to the 9 spot but staying in the lineup. Jose Peraza leading off. Christian Vasquez has gotten his second day off. Other games, Xander Bogaerts got a day off on the second game of the season. He went with Dylan Covey in that game, in a 3-run game, rather than literally anybody else. He's had this weird back and forth between having a sense of urgency and having no sense of urgency, and it's just been the worst possible mix. What have been your early impressions of Renicky?
I hate it. I really do. And I think that it's always the case when we're trying to judge managers, like, you know, we have the benefit of hindsight, obviously, but even as he's making these decisions,
there was some regular shit going on here too.
Exactly. And it's just, it's shocking because a lot of the things that he does just completely disregard numbers. And you'd think that with Bloom being in charge, like, there would be some top-down sort of mandates to follow the numbers a little bit, especially to see what you have in guys. But I don't understand. The Verdugo thing is the thing that's been bothering me the most, because Verdugo is excellent against lefties. He's just such an advanced hitter already. He plays great defense wherever he is, whether he's in left or right. He can play center too. You know, he's aggressive on the base paths. He's just one of the guys that's bringing huge energy, hustles down the line every time. Like, I've been incredibly impressed with Alex Verdugo, and he's a young guy that needs reps. He's one of the few guys, I would say, along with Xander and Devers, who I'm pretty sure are going to be on this team for the foreseeable future, definitely on the next good Red Sox team. Why you would not platoon JBJ and Pilar is beyond me. I know that JBJ is hot right now, so I get the idea of, like, when JBJ is on a hot streak, you let him do his thing. But put Pilar in there, bench Benintendi. Benintendi has looked listless at the plate. He has no confidence right now. He looks terrible against breaking pitching. Benny needs to sit. Benny needs to go in the cage. Like, I don't care that Benny is this former top prospect. Like, he looks like dog shit right now. And Verdugo deserves to be in the lineup. That's bananas.
Yeah, I am not as vehemently anti-Benintendi right now as some other people, but I totally agree that he needs a day off. I kind of gave Reneke the benefit of the doubt on opening day when Verdugo was on the bench. I kind of assumed it was sort of just deference to Bradley as a veteran on the team to give him the opening day start, and Verdugo as the youngest guy to take a seat. I didn't love it, but I understood it. I was fine with it. But yeah, him getting another day off against another lefty is worrisome. I agree with you that I feel like most days it should be Bradley, but also I'm totally down with playing the hot hand with him. But yeah, it should be Benintendi. I honestly don't really have anything to add. I think you were mostly dead on that, other than I think people are a little too extreme with Benintendi. But...
Well, I wouldn't say that I'm one of the extreme ones with Benintendi. I still very much believe in Benintendi as a player, but I do think that we've seen Benintendi run into confidence issues.
Oh, for sure.
And I don't know, you know, what really the cause of those are. Everybody's different as a player. I don't know whether it's the spotlight, the idea of, like, having to lead off for the Boston Red Sox, which kind of freaks him out. But
you keep saying
this.
His numbers in his career are basically don't suggest that he's bad in the leadoff spot.
He just doesn't look good to me. And this, you know, the numbers bear themselves out. But I think that if someone was to, and I haven't done this, so I can't say, but anecdotally to me, I think when he leads off baseball games, almost always the first at bat of a baseball game, he has almost no success. I think that he gets his hits when he's in the leadoff spot in his second, third, or fourth at bats of the night. I don't think that he's actually ever starting off the game the way that we want him to.
That's possible. I have no idea. Yeah, I think there is a way to look that up, but I'm not going to try and figure that out in real time right now.
Yeah, real time would be pretty tough, but, like, that could be a good article idea to look at that.
I might steal that. yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, it's been three starts for him. So I'm not ready to, like, pull the plug, and I don't think you are either, but
no.
I do think it makes sense to move him down to the ninth spot tonight, especially against a lefty, if you're going to play him. Like I said, I wouldn't play him either, but I think against righties, I would stick with them for a little bit longer in the leadoff spot. I'm not, especially for a guy, if we're talking about a guy with confidence issues, I'm not yanking him from the leadoff spot, because that could destroy his season if you're really worried about his confidence.
Yes, but also, I tweeted this out too, just the 60-game season, every game has so much more importance. You just don't have the luxury of letting guys figure it out in certain spots like you do in a 60-game season. You know, the Red Sox are effectively 3-9 right now heading into this game if we were to put it out there for, like, a 162 pace. So I don't know how long you can let them figure it out.
I'm giving them at least until after the Rays series, which is they play three more against the Mets, they play the Yankees this weekend, and they have two against the Rays next week. I'm giving them at least till then.
So you think they'll still be playing baseball by then?
Well, obviously that's if they're still playing baseball. And that's in Florida, too. They have to go to Florida.
Yeah.
So just not ideal.
Yeah. You could not get me on a plane to Florida right now.
No.
No way.
No. There would have to be some extenuating circumstances to get me to Florida.
It's tough enough to get me on a plane to Florida as it is.
that is a fair point. The humidity does not agree. So there's a couple more position players I want to talk about kind of quickly. Again, we're talking about four games into the year, so it's kind of hard to do any heavy analysis. But Michael Chavis, still striking out a lot. How long does he keep this up until you see Bobby Dalbec come up and get some of that time?
I don't think long. I think if he continues this for another week, that they need to make a move. It's very, very clear what Chavis's hole is. He has not solved it. His fastball's up in the zone. People have been exploiting this since they kind of figured out that this is his hole. Dalbec provides you, I think, a little bit more flexibility. He's a better defender at third and first. And, you know, it's not like Dalbec doesn't have holes in his swing. He absolutely does. And we might find out that they're just as glaring holes in his swing. But we might also find out that Dalbec, even though he strikes out a lot, can hit pitches up in the zone, can hit good pitching. The way that I've been kind of trying to explain this is like, maybe Dalbec can hit good pitching, but also strikes out a lot. With Chavis, I'm just not sure he can hit good pitching.
Well, I mean, I think he can, whether or not he will. We've seen him hit good pitching.
We've seen him hit good breaking pitching. We haven't seen him hit good fastballs.
I think he was hitting fastballs when he first came up. Fastballs up in the zone. Different story. But, I mean, he's hit some fastballs down. But, yeah, I mean, Chavis I have the shortest leash with right now. But I also think it's a little more complicated just because it sort of depends on what Jose Peraza is doing as well, unless you want to start giving starts semi-consistently to Zhuwei Lin or Jonathan Arauz. But that being said, Peraza's doing well enough that, I think Chavis definitely has the shortest leash among position players right now.
I think it's curious also that Renicky has been treating Peraza like he's a, you know, multi-time all-star.
They love Jose Peraza, and I'm kind of getting on board with Peraza, not so much because I think he's looked good, but more just because he's the kind of player that I gravitate towards, so just personally I'm going to give him a little more leeway. But yeah, they do love them some Jose Peraza, for sure.
Yeah, and he's been fine.
He had a big first game, but yeah,
impressed.
He is what he is. If he can give them like a 90 WRC plus, they'll run away with that in a heartbeat.
Let me just say that there's no way in hell that I would lead Jose Peraza off. He would be my third choice. Maybe even further down than my third choice behind Benintendi and Verdugo. I don't understand that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But, I mean, Verdugo's not in this lineup, and I don't want Benintendi leading off right now. So with this specific group of players, I guess I probably would go Peraza, but I think that says more about this specific group of players than it does about Peraza.
What about Pilar leading off against the left?
I will kill somebody if Kevin Pilar hits lead off.
How come?
Because he's not a leadoff hitter. I kind of like Pilar. I like him in the middle of the order. He's got a little bit of pop, but the guy is a 300 OBP player, even against lefties.
I mean, Peraza's pretty much that too, though.
In his career, he's been about I think he's like 337, 340 against lefties.
Oh, I don't think he's that high.
I looked it up.
Is he?
Yeah. Somewhere in that range. Against lefties, I'm talking about.
Okay.
Pilar, I think, was like 307.
Okay, well, that is much better than I anticipated.
Peraza's been good half of his career. He's just been absolutely terrible in the other half.
Yeah, he's 330 OBP lifetime against lefties, 304 versus
righties. Yeah, no way I'm leading him off against righties. No. But if you don't have Verdugo in there and you get Benintendi hitting like Benintendi's hitting, I guess you go Peraza, especially if you're not willing to put Bogarts in that spot.
Can we just say that there are a lot of below average hitters on this team right now as well? Like there are a lot of good players, but there are also some pretty bad hitters. Jose Peraza, Kevin Pilar, and JBJ are all barely below average players at being at the plate during their entire careers. You know, that's not great.
Yeah, but Pilar's our everyday player. I guess, I don't know. The lineup is pretty good. I don't really have too many bad things to say about the lineup.
Lineup looks a lot better with Verdugo, though.
For sure. And I'm basically all the way in on Christian Vasquez, by the way.
I love him.
Eckersley said he might be the best catcher in baseball last night, which is a wild, wild statement. He's obviously not that, but Vasquez is sneaky, like, in top five conversation in catchers.
I was
off the top of my head without actually thinking about it too much.
He's in the conversation. I love that he threw a guy out on the bases after the Xander Bogaerts tag last night, too. Fantastic. That was one of my favorite things.
I can't get enough. Speaking of defense, this one I know we disagree on. But how concerned are you about Rafael Devers' defense? Long term,
I think he can stay there for like four plus years.
Maybe we don't disagree.
Yeah, we don't disagree, but I also think that Devers was irresponsible. Whatever he did this offseason, he came in too heavy. That's been kind of reported.
He had a kid. I think that was probably the biggest reason. He's taking care of a baby.
Yeah, I get that, but man, like, this is your professional athlete. You got to figure this out. And the team with this pitching, as you pointed out in your article, which I thought was a good read, by the way.
Thanks.
Devers, we can't afford that defense because Xander is going to make the regular plays. We know that. But we need Devers to be at least making the plays that he's supposed to make on the left side of the infield because these pitchers aren't good enough to miss bats. And Devers' defense right now, there are too many mental errors.
Well, that was...
And I think there are some physical limitations right now.
See, well. I haven't seen him... I haven't seen any plays where I see a lack of athleticism being a problem with him. His errors are the same thing that we saw at the beginning of last season, which is just he's overthinking things, he's not making the right decisions, he's rushing throws, things like that, which in the short term, it's very concerning, it's not fun to watch, but I don't know. I'm not putting a ton of stock into what he's done so far. I still am optimistic after what we saw with the adjustments last year.
Yeah, I think the throws are the thing that is like the first piece that needs to be consistent with him. He needs to always set his feet and make those throws, and he does that too infrequently for me. My problem is with him is that on balls that he is coming in on, I feel like we see him make the most mistakes because
he has trouble judging when to like stab at the ball, when to attack the ball on a hop for sure.
Exactly, and that's something that, like, studying Wade Boggs when I wrote about him, he was able to improve upon those types of things as his career went on. Third base is one of those positions that's a little bit more cerebral in how you position yourself than just sheer athleticism. So I think that could benefit Devers. But also, he needs to get a little bit lower in my estimation, and that's one of the things that when I see him, I wonder if some of the added weight is kind of affecting him in that regard. I'm going to give it some time to see how it plays out and whether or not he can rebound. But like the best version of this Red Sox team, and again, I'll talk about the next good Red Sox team. The next good Red Sox team has Devers at third base and Tristan Casas at first base. We don't really want a situation where Devers is playing first base.
No, I think, I don't think Devers is ever going to play first base. I think if Devers isn't third base, he's DH. Would be my guess for his future.
Interesting. You don't think he can handle the
I don't think they would do that. Position? I think they have, between Dahlbeck and Casas, I think they would just move him to DH and just let him just swing the bat.
Yeah, I don't want to see that either because I think
not for sure, no. I don't think
at
it's
his
happen
best, anymore. You know, he can be an above average third baseman.
I think I'm not expecting that. I think he's going to settle in as a slightly below average third baseman, which with his bat, I'll take any day of the week.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that.
All right. So we're going to finish up now with some listener questions. First one comes from Sox Junkie. He says, you're at a bar with your lady. Not sure about calling somebody your lady, but we'll go with it. And Chris Sale starts to flirt with her. You immediately ask him to back off, but he looks at you with that crazy look in his eyes, almost as crazy as when he yelled at the entire dugout in the 2018 World Series. What's your next move? Are you squaring up?
I don't know, Matt. What are you doing here?
There's not a chance I'm squaring up. Are you insane? First of all, I'm not squaring up against anybody. I have been in a couple of fights in my life. I'm not very good at it. And even if you hit somebody, that hurts. Punching somebody hurts a lot. I prefer not to be hurt. So, no, I'm not squaring up. Also, Chris Sale is a monster. I know he looks like very tall and skinny. He is very tall and skinny, but he's very tall.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully things don't escalate to this, but if you have to fight Chris Sale, you got to get him on the ground. That's the only way you're going to have any success here.
Also, I'm not immediately asking him to back off. I am going to be a little more cordial and a little more subtle than just immediately. I'm not going in that aggressive to start.
You're not going to just grab a beer bottle and bottle him?
Like, I'm not in Roadhouse, so I'm going to go ahead and be an adult about this for sure.
I don't even think I could bottle Chris Sale if I wanted to because his head's like 7 feet tall.
You know, I'm tall.
I'd have
I'm
to jump to bottle him.
I think I'm a little bit taller than you, but
there's
just no way that whole situation would not go the way that this question was lined up for sure.
Oh man, that's funny.
All right, next one is from Jackson Posey. Always has the weirdest questions. Never understand them. That is also the case with this one. So he says, sugar and spice and everything nice, that's what girls are made of, or so the old saying goes. What are top Red Sox made of? You can go ahead and answer this, because I don't even understand the question.
Top Red Sox are made of pine tar and, I don't know. Gatorade?
I feel like that is the most disgusting combination I've ever in my entire life. I'm picturing just like a soupy, sticky red Gatorade. And I hate it.
Yeah.
I hate it a lot.
Whatever was on Pineda's back of his hand. That's what
with Gatorade made of. On top of it, too. It has to be red Gatorade because that is just the grossest. Not taste wise, but just like it's getting stained everywhere.
When I think of Gatorade, that's the only color I think of.
Yeah, me too, and it's not my favorite.
No, I like Cool Blue.
Yeah, for sure. Cool Blue or Glacier Freeze. Either of the blue ones. Everything tastes better when it's blue.
Totally.
All right, Robbie Hyde, what percent chance do you give Alex Cora coming back in 2021?
85.
Wow. I say 20. I'm not super confident it's going to happen.
I can't handle Renicky.
Renicky, I give a 0% chance coming back. I'm just not seeing that. But I don't think it's going to be Alex Cora. I think they're going to go somebody else.
I don't know, man.
I don't think he's getting a manager job anywhere right out the gate. I don't think anybody's just handing him a manager job right now.
I hope he gets it back.
I'm conflicted.
You wouldn't want to see him there?
I kind of would, but also, I don't know. I still don't really love what the Astros did, and I think maybe his role was overplayed a little bit, but also he still had a pretty big role, and I'm not crazy about that.
He was so well regarded by the players.
That's why I'm conflicted.
Yeah, I just really like him.
But I don't think it's going to happen, but I seem to be in the minority in that, so take that for what it's worth. Jim LaFrance asks why the Red Sox didn't draft pitching first in the draft. I'll let you handle this.
That's a good question, because there were a lot of really good pitching options available to the Red Sox. This draft was super deep in pitching. I guess they just kind of fell in love with Nick York as a player. And the Red Sox actually haven't been very effective at drafting pitching highly and having it work out lately, so it's probably for the best they didn't draft a pitcher.
Yeah, I mean, I think you just pick the player that you like, and obviously picking York was more than just liking York, not to say that they don't, because I know that they very much do, but also the signing bonus and that whole thing. But yeah, you don't draft for need. That's just not how the baseball draft works.
Nope.
Around the Diamond podcast asks, who are the best independent baseball content creators, i.e. no MLB Network or ESPN?
Well, Fangraphs is like my favorite
website. I wasn't even considering...
Because they're independently owned.
Yeah, no, I wasn't considering writing for some reason.
Oh, well, so, yeah, I mean, off the top of my head, like, Fangraphs is amazing. I really like a lot of the work that Ralph Lifshitz and the guys over at Prospects Live have done. They've kind of blown up very quickly with a lot of hard work there. I don't know, those two come to mind specifically.
I would probably say Over the Monster. I mean, it's pretty upsetting that you didn't say that. No, I guess I was
trying to be humble, man. Come on. That's
stupid. I don't know. I was thinking of like video, I guess just because he said MLB Network. I don't really have a great answer to that. I kind of like John Boy. I don't know if I'm supposed to or not. I haven't decided if it's cool or not to like John Boy, but I think his video breakdowns are funny.
I think the best baseball account for growing the game on the entire Twitter sphere is Rob Friedman's Pitching Ninja. Everyone universally loves it. It's the best account.
Yeah, but I don't know.
Especially if you're a pitching nerd.
I guess that's... I don't know that he's independent. But I guess if he's not independent, then John Boy wouldn't be either because they both have deals with MLB. But, yeah, I do. I mean, I definitely can't argue with that. All right.
There's so much good content. We're super spoiled with baseball content these days.
You know, it could be even better if baseball would just let people post videos online.
Yep.
It's Uncle Jeff asks, when do we see Mata or Houck or Groom? He also asked about putting in a claim for Fulton Evich. We already talked about that, so we will focus on the prospect part of that.
I think you will see Houck soon. And I think you should see Houck soon because he is probably a lot more ready than a lot of the guys that we've seen already. Mata and Groom, I'm not sure we see this year. Maybe Mata late, but I don't think we see Groom.
Yeah, I agree. I think we might see Mata as a reliever for the last few weeks of the season, especially if the Red Sox are out of it, just to kind of give him a taste. But yeah, Houck's the only guy that I think we're going to see any sort of real time from. And yeah, I would expect that definitely within the next few. KG asks, do the Red Sox have the worst pitching staff in baseball? Please explain your answer of yes.
Right now they do.
Yeah.
Like, clearly. I don't think that's... Yeah, and I think the issue is that even... So I'm just going to compare them to another horrible pitching staff in the Baltimore Orioles, a team that going into the third game against the Red Sox, and I said this on the last podcast, had a 1.1% chance to make the playoffs, according to Fangraphs, which was by far the lowest for any 1-1 team at that time. They at least have a pitching staff that is composed of former starting pitchers who have had success at one point or another. It doesn't have to be smashing success, but like we saw it. Wade LeBlanc, a journeyman guy, throws soft stuff but knows how to locate, so when he's locating, he's actually effective. Alex Cobb, a former like high ceiling pitcher who can turn over a lineup a couple times when he's healthy. The Red Sox don't have anybody who can really say that they've had huge major league success recently other than Eovaldi, and even him, it's like spotty because of his health.
Yeah, he was very good in 2018.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, you're right. I think... Without actually doing a deep dive on all the other pitching staffs in baseball, I think the Red Sox probably have the worst staff.
I mean, how about Weber, a guy who has to completely avoid the zone in order not to get blown?
The only way Ryan Weber can be good is if he gets a big strike zone. That is,
yeah,
that is the only way.
That's just not. It's not gonna work.
Yeah, it's not a recipe for success.
Only Angel Hernandez starts.
Well, he got, because he looked pretty good in one of the exhibition games, and the strike zone was huge. And he was putting everything like just off the plate, and he was getting called for strikes, and so he did pretty well. If that's not happening, then it's not going to go well for him.
And the best pitchers in baseball can all throw their stuff in the zone and still get you to miss. So, you know, if you can't even approach the zone, it's probably a bad sign.
Yeah, it's not great. And then last question, I don't really even know what to say. This Ben Jacobson says, why does Benintendi suck? I mean, we already spent enough time on Benintendi. I don't think either of us think he sucks, but right now he's not doing very well.
Yeah, I think it's just confidence in breaking pitches right now. We've seen him drop to a knee a few times on breaking pitches. Yeah, so
he's not Adrian Beltre.
No. No, he's not.
All right, so I think that will do it for us in this one. Hopefully things go better tonight, so when you're listening to this, some of our doom and gloom about the pitching staff looks a little bit more over the top than it should, but I don't have much confidence that that's going to happen. But thank you for listening. Do the rating, do the subscribing, do the telling everybody. Follow us on Twitter. I forgot about this one last time. I will remember this time. You can follow me. I'm just going to give out the Over the Monster account at Over the Monster. That's what you're interested in. I doubt you're interested in my personal account. You can follow Jake at DevJake. Anything else before we sign off?
Just check out the content that we're making at Over the Monster. Matt's always doing really good work there. I had a piece today on my all-time Red Sox lineup construction against righties and lefties, and I've got a piece comparing my lineup to the all-time Yankees lineup that I worked on with the guys over at Pinstripe Alley coming out later in the week. So just stay tuned for more good written content at the site.
Good message. All right, we will close with that, and we will be back with you next week.